The date is June 27th. We're here with Dr. George Cosmos for an oral history interview. Thank you for sitting with us, Dr. Cosmos.
To start off,
can you tell me a bit about your family? Did you know your grandparents? And if so, what do you remember about them?
Yes, I knew my grandparents on my father's side, not on my mother's side. Of course, I'm not from Warren County, I'm from Grenada. My grandfather was very enterprising, very hardworking. During his time, he acquired a lot of land. He was also a very avid reader. His favorite book to read was the law books of the island, which he knew so well that although he was not a lawyer, but he represented people within the community who had any legal conflicts. Mm-hmm. And he would, it was permissible for someone like that to represent clients at the time on the island. And even the people who went to university and studied, he would argue against them and win cases.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you said he acquired a great deal of land in Grenada.
Yeah.
What did he do for a living?
Farming. He did
farming.
And when I say that he acquired a lot of land, I have to say that is relative.
Mm-hmm.
Relative in the sense that it was perhaps about 120 acres, but 120 acres is I would consider to be a lot in an island that is 120 square miles.
Mm-hmm.
So I said that he had lots of land.
Okay. And is that where you grew up?
Yes.
On the farm?
I grew up on a farm. I grew up in Grenada until, as I said, I was 19, and then I came to the U.S.
Okay, and switching gears a bit, are there any illnesses that run in your family in Grenada that you can recall?
Hypertension. Yeah, I have uncles with hypertension. Or the illness that I would think of would be prostate cancer. On my mother's side, you have their diabetes and thyroid disease. That's what I could recall.
Okay. Uh-huh. And how did those affect your family? Any particular ways where, women widowed or children left behind?
Well, one of my uncles who had hypertension and was not treated because I think he was non-compliant. He died at 48, and he left. He left what? How many? Like 8 kids with his wife.
Wow.
And they were all very young.
Were those kids about the same age as you, or it's a different generation?
Just a little bit younger than I am. I would say they were 5 to 15 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how did their mother cope?
I think she adjusted very well because she was very resourceful, although she did not have any formal training or any skills, but she started her own business doing baking.
Mm-hmm.
She was a fancy cake maker. And this is what she used to essentially raise her kids.
Wow.
That's That's what she did. And I think that her kids did well because she was able to send, you know, get every one of them to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they, you know, some, so that every one of them has at least a bachelor's degree, and some even have doctorate degrees. Yeah.
Awesome. Can we talk a little bit about your parents? Did they also work on the farm, or did they do other things?
My father worked on the farm, and they waited. And farm life in the Caribbean and islands is a little bit different from here. You find that not a whole lot of machinery is used. So many things are manual. You do not plant, I would say, what I call your annual crops, but you have permanent crops. The three things that we grew were for money were cocoa, nutmeg, and banana. These were your money crops. Of course, nutmeg is say comparable to say pecan, where you plant a pecan tree, and that pecan tree would take 15, 20 years to start producing. But once it starts producing, you get it every year. It's essentially the same thing with nutmeg. In about 15 years, it would be producing, and you get it. Since the temperature there is constant, it's not every year, but it's like every day. It just mm-hmm. produces. Okay, so that's your nutmeg. Cocoa is a shorter crop. It takes about 5 years for it to start producing, but once it starts producing, you essentially harvest constantly. Banana takes about 6 to 9 months for it to start producing, and again, it would produce from that point on. Periodically, you have to in about every 5 to 6 years. You would want to replant your bananas, but it's essentially a permanent crop. So it's not like here where you have to plow and harvest like how you do wheat or tobacco or those things. You deal with permanent crops. Of course, there are other things that are grown, but these were the three main things that we grow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a lot of work. Were there a number of family members coming in to help keep things going with the 120 acres of the nutmeg, the cocoa, the bananas?
Oh, the 120 acres was essentially owned by my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And then what he did, he gave to all the kids. So all the kids had some land that they would work with.
I see.
We were only dealing with, I would say, perhaps about 12 acres.
So then your uncles would have another 12 acres.
Right. So it was divided out. And of course my father had some people who would come in, laborers who came in to work, particularly when a particular crop was really producing. Although those things would produce constantly, there's a time when it would peak. Time of the year when it would pick,
mm-hmm.
you see. And at that time, you'd have extra people working.
I see.
Yeah.
And so you had all your family living right next door?
Not really.
No.
Because about that 120 acres was not just one track.
I see.
There were mm-hmm. multiple tracks, so that they were within, I would say, within a 6 mile radius.
Mm-hmm.
You had, but it was not one track.
Okay.
And
so, could you talk about what it was like on the farm where you were growing up? Who do you remember being there and working? Did you do any work on the farm?
Oh yes.
Yes.
When you grew up on a farm, you had to work. The typical day, my father would always get up, and he would. You see, at that time, there was no electricity around. We did not have. There was no TV. Things were somewhat basic. The signal that you would use, that he would use to get up, there was always a rooster around, and at a certain time in the morning the rooster would crow, and then the rooster would crow, and then the rooster would crow, and usually he would say, "Oh, this is the third cock crow, so it's time to get up." And amazingly, at that time used to be around 4 a.m. when he would get up, and the typical routine that he would get up, when he get up, we would be awakened and we had to say our morning prayers. We had to say our morning prayers. Then he would leave to go to the farm, where what he would be doing would be milking the cow. When he while he's doing this, of course, my mother would be preparing breakfast and lunch, because we had to go to school, and you did not go to school and have a cafeteria where you would eat. You basically went to school with your lunch. But before going to school, when she was finished cooking, we had to carry his breakfast and lunch out in the field to him, which was about, I would say that was about a mile away. And when we brought his breakfast and lunch to him, just at dawn, we would collect the milk that he drew that morning, bring it home, and that is what we would consume for that day until the next morning. Let's see. And amazingly, the milk, once you boil the milk, it would sit there, it would not go bad, and there was no refrigeration. You collected the cream from that milk so that you could make butter, right? You can make butter. After we brought his breakfast for him, we came back. We had to take care of the chicken in the yard. We had to feed the dog. We had to feed the pig. Feed the rabbit. Take care of the goat. Take care of the sheep. And when we did all of that, then we were now ready to go to school. And we had about a, I think that was about a, I would say about a 3 mile walk to go to school.
What was that walk like? Is it, you know, I imagine it's not a paved road the whole way, or is it?
No, it wasn't a paved road the whole way. We would walk about half a mile from where we live to get to the paved road. We were off what we call a gravel road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the gravel was placed there. Of course, if you had a heavy rainfall, the gravel would wash away, and then it would then be mud. You know, but that's where we were. School usually went from 9 to 3, and when we left school, we got home. Of course, we would. The usual snack we would get when we got home were just fruits, tropical fruits. We had an abundance of those on the farm. So we would, you know, mango, sapodilla, golden apple, sugar apple, orange, banana, you know, those type of things you'd have. We would take care of the, we had to again take care of the animals. And my mother would always have her little kitchen garden. So we had to go down to the creek, get water to come to wet the plants in the kitchen garden. And you did that before you then did your homework. If we did not have homework, there's always something there to be done. You never got away. And my mother, who was an ex-teacher, she would always see to it that you do your homework. If you didn't have homework, and you always wanted to have homework, because if you didn't have homework, she would find something for you to do, which was more than the homework that you would have had to do.
Like chores or?
No, you know, she would give you, you know, reading or math, some passage that you had to read, and, you know, then do questions, or she would question you, and she would have you do spelling and vocabulary and all those type things, you know. Yeah. Now, when I started high school and I started to do foreign language, she never had any foreign language. And I was doing Latin. And I would come home and she would call me, translate this. And she would be there and she said, "Now, you need to go talk to the teacher." Did not realize that although she did not know any Latin, but we were translating this book, Caesar's Travels. And she read all of that. Historically, she knew the story. So when I should translate and try to make it up, she would realize, well, no, this is not what I know. So she didn't challenge me. And I was convinced that she knew Latin. She didn't know a word of Latin. You know, she did not know any Latin until, and I did not figure that out until at the end, you know, at the end, that I realized that she did not know any Latin.
Yeah. So it sounds like your mother was pretty well educated and well read. And what did your parents do for healthcare?
Well, my mother had a simple system that she used. She would manage her money. She had different containers, and she had this particular container there where she'd put the money that is for the doctor or for health. And whenever we were sick, there was not, after you got your basic immunization, there was not, say, routine health checkup, but whenever you got sick, she always had money in that container to take you to the doctor and to get your medication. Mm. Yeah. There was, you know, growing up at that time, there was nothing like health insurance. You know, that just did not exist.
Okay.
But, you know, that's what she would do. The initial thing, though, you had different home remedies that she would try, and there were many ailments where you can, if she did not know, there were people that she would call and she would say, "Well, look, this is the problem. What do I do?" And there was some herb out there that they would recommend. The typical thing that we would have would be cuts and bruises. And for cuts and bruises, the local thing, they would get that aloe vera.
Mm-hmm.
They would get the aloe vera. They would warm it, put it on there. For sprains, and we had lots of those playing. We played soccer, and you always sprain an ankle or something like that. And you would come, and she would use. Well, in Grenada we call it saffron, but it's really turmeric, and it grows like a weed all over the place. So she would send one of the kids, the one who was not injured, to pull up a plant, and she would just grate it, and make add a little salt to it, make a poultice, put on that joint, wrap it up. In the morning, you wake up, you're fine. You know, you're fine. Now, interestingly, and now that I'm looking at the other side, I realize that turmeric indeed is a very potent anti-inflammatory, and it is said that it is the most potent anti-inflammatory there is. So that the indication for which you used it made sense, and you know they had no medical training, but passed down through the generations, they knew, well, this is what you use when you have sprains. This is what you use when you have cuts and bruises, you know. Mm-hmm. There are things that they use for a headache. There are things that they use if you have insomnia, you can't sleep. Things that they use for, you know, diarrhea, and they could find a herb. Interestingly, as a kid, the old people who had arthritis, they would always want a young kid, because the tree was a little bit tall, send you to get a branch of this for them. And they would take this, pull the leaves off, put it in their bathtub, and they would bathe with it for the arthritis.
What's that?
It was much later I realized what that was. It was the marijuana plant.
Mm.
Yeah. And if you apply it to the joints, your arthritis, you get some relief. They would, not only would they use it in their bath, but they also take a handful of leaves and they would boil it and make a tea, and they would drink that. And they would claim that after doing that, they felt so much better. They can now move, you know? Yeah. So it's something which, I'm not saying to go out and get some, but it's something that works. And it's also, it was also used for vomiting. It's it's very good for vomiting. Even here, it's known that if you're on chemotherapy and you have this unrelenting vomiting, smoking a joint would help, you know, it would help, yeah.
So it sounds like there was a wealth of resources, like on the natural landscape, and folks know how to access them. So I'm wondering, what was the trip to the doctor like, and was there an instance when you were living there that you had to go yourself, and what was that like?
Yeah, I had to. Usually the trip to the doctor, you had when I was very young, I hated to go to the doctor because I didn't like that needle. You know, I did not like that needle. But later on, most of the times when I would go, it was, you know, because I had a severe cold. I remember that was a common occurrence. You have a severe cold, so you would go to the doctor. The one time that I went, well, I had to go on my own. I had a car accident and had a laceration on my leg that had to be sutured, you see, and I went for that. It was fun because the area where that accident happened was close to one particular physician who was very funny. He was very jovial about things, and he tried to calm you down, you know. And I realized when I went there that time, I remember what he said about, oh, you should not be nervous because I'm more nervous than you are. You know, but I don't think that he was nervous. I just think he was trying to calm me down, you know.
And so did you see him in like an office at his home or a hospital? Where is it set up?
Oh, the setup that we had at the time, we had what was called visiting stations.
Okay.
And a visiting station is something that the that the government built, and a doctor would be assigned to the visiting station. He has, his hours are divided into public and private. When it's public, it's like a clinic where people would come and they would be seen. And you don't have an appointment or anything. You just come and between the hours of 9 and 1, the clinic is open. And when the clinic is over, he typically say he may have lunch from 1 to 2. And then from 2 to 4, it's now private. And the people who are seen are the people who would pay extra. They have an appointment. They come and they are seen.
Okay.
All right. So that's usually how it is. Now, as a kid, for the times that my mother would take me, she would go to the clinic, you know. And then, because if you go to the clinic, you pay $10. You go to the private, you pay $50. You see, so you get the same. You see the same person, you get the same prescription, except that one is like private, and one is public, but it's the same facility, the same physician. It's just the time that you were seen.
When you were there, would you see other people you knew, or you know, was it mostly strangers? Just trying to get a sense of.
Oh, when you went to see the doctor?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, you'd see people that you know.
Okay.
Because it's a facility that's in the within that community.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically know the people in the community.
Okay, cool.
So you would see them.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so now I'm wondering, thinking about this community in Grenada and the farm, how do you go from nutmeg trees to Warren County?
Simple answer. Drive in. No, but as a kid coming up and, you know, having to work on that farm, the area where I hated to work was in the cocoa. Cocoa is horrible. It's a lot of manual labor. Things are heavy. It's hot. The beans got to be fermented, and in that little building where they're fermenting, if the temperature outside is 90, within that building, it's about 120.
Goodness.
And you have a sea of fruit flies. You're supposed to wear a mask or something over your nose, but it's so hot, you sweat so much that when that becomes wet, you can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically hold your breath, go and walk for a while, come out, and you breathe. What you have to do in that little building is to turn the beans. There are fermenting cells, and the cell you alternate the cells. You're fermenting here. This one is empty. You're fermenting here. This one is empty, and every day you flip the beans. All right. Now you may have about 800,000 pounds of beans that you have to flip.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, and we are doing that. So that work was so hard that coming up, I said that, you know, I want to get away from this. I don't want to do this, you know. And my mother would always say, well, you make your decision. Decide if you want to make a living using a short pen or a long pen.
Mm-hmm.
and essentially by the long pen, she meant using the type of agricultural tools to do that manual labor. And I said to myself, I'm getting away from this. So after I finished school, I worked for 6 months, and I decided that, during that time I knew that I was going to leave, and I wanted to go to Howard University, and that's where I ended up.
Why Howard?
When I was coming up as a kid, all of the dentists And the doctors that I knew in Grenada went to Howard. And, you know, interestingly, when I left home, I really did not plan to do medicine. My initial thing was to get out. Mm-hmm. That was number one. Just get out. What you would do, that would come later, you know. So I went to Howard, and when I got to Howard, then I decided, well, this is what I want to do. Because one of the things that I did not want to do, I never wanted to work for anybody. Never. I never wanted to work for anybody. And I could say that I've never worked for anybody. The 6 months that I worked when I was in Grenada, well, that's really nothing. I would say I worked for somebody when I went through residency training, but when I was in undergrad, I owned my own taxi, and mm-hmm. that's what I drove, so that I don't have to work for anybody. And when I was finished with medical school, I went into private practice. Wow. So, that's one of the things I wanted to do, and that. Medicine was a way I saw where I could accomplish that goal, mm-hmm. not work for anybody. I think, though, you know, I used to fuss with my wife all the time because she's a retired educator, and she would always tell kids, well, you need to study hard, do well so you can get a job. And I would always cringe because what you really need to tell kids, not that they get a job, but they need to study hard, they need to do well so that they could have the means to earn a living through a job or a business. Mm-hmm. You see? And that is that's what I that's the way I look at things. I don't like jobs.
Mm-hmm. You know? So how did you make your way from D.C. where Howard is to Warren County?
Driving. No, I was in Washington, and at the time I was in Washington, and I would call it a turbulent period. The crime was going up. The drugs was a big problem. Oh, and it still is. I was working, and the malpractice insurance was going through the roof. And at that point in time, I was thinking of, I said, gosh, I think I need to get out of D.C. And right at that time, there was a physician from Vance County, Dr. J.P. Green. He came up to Howard, and he said, you know, I need to talk to some of you all young doctors. You all are tripping over each other up here, and I want to show you all where we really need some doctors. So he invited us down. And when he invited us down, a few of us decided, well, let's go check out what he's talking about. And I came down. He said, you know, we really need to have, we need to get some doctors for Warren County. I looked around, and I kind of liked the place. I felt that it was a place that was not as contaminated as D.C. I had young kids, and I wanted them to have a place where they could grow up with some freedom. In D.C., they were basically locked in. Although I had a beautiful park across from where I lived, there were so many drug pushers there that I did not trust going out there, and I wouldn't let them go out there without me, you see, so that they loved to ride their bicycles. They couldn't ride their bicycles, you know, because if I was not available to go to the park with them, they just couldn't go. Mm-hmm. So with all of that going on, I came down here, looked at it, I fell in love with it. I liked the fact that it was rural, quiet. I felt that would permit me to again have control on things and the forces out there are not so overbearing that I could manage things. And that's how I came here, through that Dr. J.P. Green.
Wow.
Do you know him?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
He's from originally from Warren County, right? And then he moved to Vance County.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was your first reaction of the people here? Or to the people?
Well, I really didn't find anything that unusual about them,
mm-hmm.
although I was from Washington, D.C., but I came from the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like moving back home, you see? It's just like moving back home. When I came here, I found them to be very, they were very friendly, you know, welcoming. I did not have any problem with them. They were very helpful and willing to walk along with me and show me things and tell me things, try to get me adjusted to the new environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you had heard about race relations in the South, in D.C., or had you? And if you had, were you worried about that, moving here to a small town in North Carolina?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't worried. I knew that, you know, they've had racial unrest and all of that going on, and they've had lynching and all of those things. But for some reason, I was never afraid.
Sure.
You know, I was never afraid. I guess that because of the way I grew up, I was never bothered by that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when I came down, I know that I had challenges at the hospital. You know, they were not, particularly in Henderson, they were not used to having a black person do surgery, and they had instituted a rule where the new surgeons coming in had to be observed, you know, and I had somebody observing me who observed me for a while, and then he reported, well, I think he's okay, you don't have to watch him anymore, he knows what he's doing, you know, those type things. Whether this was racially motivated or just a policy, I don't know, but that's the rule that I know came into effect when I moved there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Backtracking a little bit, so you come with Dr. J.P. Green, and you're persuaded, I guess, immediately on the trip to move down from D.C. to here?
Oh no, after he spoke to us in Washington, D.C., I came down to look at the area.
I see.
I came down, spent, I think, 3 days. I spent 3 days here, looked around Warrenton, looked around Henderson, and I think that was in July. It was like in July, and I moved in October.
I see.
Yeah.
And so, at this time, you said you had your kids, so you were married, and brought the whole family down.
Yeah, I made the first trip myself. The next trip, I came down with my wife,
mm-hmm.
and then the next time I moved.
Mm-hmm.
So on the third trip I stayed. Of course, my wife initially did not want to. She did not want to move. She didn't want to leave D.C. She felt relaxed, comfortable. That everything was right at hand, you know, and was concerned that so many of the conveniences that she wanted and she had gotten used to, she would not have. But after she came down here, she did get adjusted. It's amazing that a few, 8-10 years, we went back to D.C. and she said, gosh, I can't wait to get out of this place. you know. So at that time, Warren County grew on her, and now she likes it. I felt that when kids grow up in an area where they lack certain things, it somewhat motivates them to be more resourceful, you know, and creative, and they perform better, you know. They perform better. I believe that yes, education is important, but perhaps the most important thing in raising kids is what I call a strong psychological constitution.
Mm-hmm.
If they are lacking academically, they can catch up if they're mentally tough. But if they're not mentally tough, and they have all the academic knowledge, they won't make it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like building a castle on a weak foundation, you see. But if you have a good foundation, you could put anything up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you remember your first day working in Warren County as a physician?
No, I don't remember the exact first day, but I remember some things that happened the first few months.
Did you talk about some of that?
I remember having one. It dealt with a patient who was very, very sick, to the point where she was essentially comatose.
Mm.
But I recognized that the problem that she had was what we call an abscess, a pelvic abscess, which is something that you have to treat surgically. I remember taking her to the hospital in Henderson, and when she got there, I was told, well, why are you operating on this dead patient? And I said, well, if I don't operate on her, she would die, but if I operate on her, she may live. And interestingly, I operated on her. We did the surgery as fast as we could, got her out of the OR, and the next day, she was sitting up, eating Big Macs. Somebody brought her in Big Macs. Now, after he has that major surgery, you're not supposed to eat for days. And she was eating. Tolerated it well, no problem. In 1 week, she was gone home. You know, and it's a case where we had certain complications also when you have an abscess. It's not unusual that you run into complications, and we had some of those, but she came through well. She did fine, you know. So that's one case that I remember. They, you know, early on, something that would disturb me quite a bit, the fact that I would talk to so many ladies who would give you a history of never having any surgery at all, none. And I would examine them and I'd say, gosh, you said you didn't have any surgery, but you know you do not have a uterus.
Mm.
And you question them, and they'd say, oh, when I had my last baby, the doctor told me that I was having babies too fast, so he would help me. This is what they know. And you see, at that point in time, they would have surgeries done without consent. Ladies would deliver a baby and they are put to sleep, so they really don't know what's going on. It would be a couple of days afterwards they see the baby when they come apart. But and of course you know that North Carolina settled in the eugenics program, mm-hmm. and that is all part of it. But there were quite a few people who did not know that they were involved in that program. And, you know, I saw quite a few of those people, you know, and they did not know because they would swear that they never had any surgery. You know, that's something that used to disturb me quite a bit initially, that they did not know that they had been sterilized. Okay. I'm thinking of just something. You know, there are so many things that you just kind of categorize. But there was one case that we had earlier on where there was a physician here who overdosed, and myself, the another doctor who was in town, myself, we were able to save him. The interesting thing about this, that after he came through, he was upset at us for saving him.
What do you mean saving him?
Well, we saved his life.
How so?
Yeah, because he had OD'd. Uh-huh. He had an overdose. And we resuscitated him successfully, for which we thought that he would have been thankful, but he was upset that we intervened and saved his life, mm-hmm. because he wanted to commit suicide, mm-hmm. and realize, well, look, because of us, he was not successful. He was not happy about this.
Could you talk about the health landscape here in Warren County? When you arrived, do you feel like, you know, it was adequate for the people who lived here? What's your assessment of it, looking back?
No, it's not adequate. But I look at health in a little differently and on different levels. I think that first, the people have to be knowledgeable about their personal health, because you are in charge of your health, so that you should know the things that you should do. The fundamental thing that you should do would be to essentially know that you have to eat right, exercise, have your basic immunizations and sanitation, so that the knowledge is very important, and to me is really the key. What is it that you need so that you would remain healthy? And I feel that it's something that you can learn within the home or through the school. The school now, I think, should step in, because they know that the people don't know, so school's supposed to get the people prepared, so that's what they should do. You know, another big part of this is the fact that in order for you to do some of those things, you need to have the income, mm-hmm. to be able to afford it. And I'm not talking about affording what we would call health care, but affording food, a place to live which is sanitary, and the fact that you are not in a trailer that is a manufactured trailer that is loaded with a lot of toxins, and that air that you breathe day and days is toxic. So you have to be able to afford that. One of the Warren County is very good for that, because you with that PCB project, you know, is a key point. Say you had a family who is in that area that's contaminated, where they can't afford to move. You see, they can't afford to move. That would significantly affect their health. when you so when you take care of the education, when you take care of the finances, you then really get into healthcare. Because if those pieces over here are not taken care of, the healthcare that a provider would give has a lot of challenges to overcome. You see? You're treating this patient for asthma, but the patient is allergic to that trailer in which she lives. You won't fix her. But if you could just get her to move over to that trailer, boom, she's mm-hmm. well. Or she is close to a factory. She's close to a hog farm. You see? You're close to the hog farm, but this is your land right here, and you cannot afford to get land some other place, you see? So that's how I look at what's going on here. I think that it's now fashionable for people to eat from the fast food places, and they have moved away from eating the stuff that they produce. Well, they don't even do it anymore, you know. You don't have a kitchen garden of your own. You see? So if you do your own, you know, well, it's good, and you do not add the toxins to your food, then your body would remain healthier. You do a little exercise. People don't go out and walk to the neighbor or do this. The neighbor is across the yard, but they get on the cell phone and you sit on the couch and you call them. So you don't exercise, you see. Mm-hmm. So these are major factors that affect your health. Now, when you come to the provider, yes, you do not have adequate provider. In Warren County, a big challenge that I saw, the fact that a lot of people could not come to the doctor because they did not have transportation and there is no public transportation. So they would go to the emergency room because their neighbor who has a car comes home from work at 6 o'clock when the doctor's office is closed and the only thing open is the emergency room. So they go to the emergency room. That friend can sit there with them. Well, now it takes a whole lot longer, but 2-3 hours, then bring them back home, you see. So the emergency room is still used quite a lot because people don't have, there is no public transportation, so they could go back and forth and see the doctor during the regular office hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how would you say you got here in 83, mm-hmm. and started working. And when did you retire from medicine?
2005.
Mm-hmm. Just in that time, how would you say the health of Warren County and its community changed?
I don't see. In terms of. I really don't think that it has. I would say that it has not. Hasn't changed. I would say one of the main providers of here is the health department where you get preventive health, and they do a great job doing immunizations and an STD. Mm-hmm. They tend to do that. Very well. The number of providers, I don't think that has changed. Currently, the health department is still there, and you have the rural health group, and you have BMC. So I don't think that things has changed. You may have more, I think you may have more obesity now, because people are less active and they eat more fast food. So I haven't looked at the stats, but it may even go down. The one thing, though, that is more of a problem here now is substance abuse. You know, that's a big deal, substance abuse. Substance abuse and, of course, gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
These are two that I think are beginning to get rid of the younger age group. Yeah.
Do you have a primary care provider here yourself in Warren County?
Well, I go to one in Henderson.
How long have you been with the doctor?
Essentially since I came here. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And all of your family goes to the same doctor as well?
No. My wife goes to someone in Granville County.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we're going to wrap it up there. We're approaching an hour. So is there anything else that you would like to add about health and wellness and Warren County from your perspective, or anything that I haven't asked about that you might want to share?
Health and wellness. I believe that there should be more emphasis on teaching people that their diet and exercise is a major determinant of their health, and that they should eat a proper diet. They should exercise. Try to avoid toxins. In Warren County, being an agricultural area, you find that the farmers use a whole lot of weedicide, pesticides, and all those sides that are not good for the exposure. Although you may not use any of that yourself, but somebody miles away can use something on a windy day, and you would be exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So, exercise, eat well, and avoid the toxins.
Do you keep a garden here?
Yes, I do have one.
Is that something you started right after you moved, or recently?
Well, not right after I moved, because when I moved, I was in the city. I would, I'd have a tomato plant or something like that. But now I have a garden which is about 3 times the size of this room.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I grow the things that I like. Yeah.
What's that?
Okra, eggplant, all colors of peppers, and borer beans.
Borer beans.
Yeah. They're long beans you see in the Chinese store. They're about 18 inches long.
Do you ever get to get your hands on some Grenada fruit, or has it been a while?
I do. I go to Grenada once a year.
Oh, love.
So when I go, I can always get this. And my sister has now transitioned from the typical crop, nutmeg, cocoa, banana, to growing tropical fruits. Oranges, mangoes, golden apple, sugar apple, and those type things. So there's always one of those in season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Cosmos. It's been lovely speaking with you.
Very good. Thank you so much. I hope I fulfilled your request.
Great interview. And